Okay, welcome everybody. Thanks for coming along to my second session in the afternoon. It's like a back-to-back afternoon with me today. Okay, we'll start off with this. So who can tell me where this is from? Australia? Yep, cool. So I'm from Australia, where this kind of thing goes on. And I eat this for breakfast as growing up as a kid. Has anybody tried Vegemite here at all? One, a couple of people. Keep your hands up if you liked it. It didn't disgust you. Yeah? Awesome. Cool. Okay. A lot of people are absolutely disgusted by it. A friend of mine has made a habit of videotaping North Americans and various people eating Vegemite for the first time and their reaction. It's quite hilarious. So we're known for like these really good beaches and like the great life, and everybody wants to go to Australia and it's fantastic and all this kind of thing. But this is really more the reality. We're a country of extremes. Things that kill you, things that bite you, things that endanger your life. And this is where I'm from. So we've got this box jellyfish that has enough like venom in it to kill 12 people. And if you don't get treated within, I think it's an hour or two, it can literally mean the end of you. So there's so many hazardous things in Australia. Can you imagine waking up and going out to your car and finding this guy on the roof of your four-wheel drive? A bit terrifying. And we've got this spider, the redback spider, which is one of the most venomous house spiders in the world. And it's, you know, something that Australians have to deal with day to day. And I want to do this quiz of how many species of spiders there are in Australia to like kick things off a bit. So are there A, 10, B, 500, or C, 2,000? Who thinks A? B? And C? Everybody. Okay, yeah, you're right. It's 2,000 species of spiders there are in Australia. Can you imagine there's 2,000 species of spiders that are out to get you? Like, I think there's one type of spider in the UK where I've lived for the last 4 years. And it's completely harmless, right? But the good thing about this session is I don't need to cover 2,000 things to migrate and coexist with Link 2013. I've only got 12 things to cover today to ensure that you avoid all the rocky road to your end goal within migration, and you avoid ending up like this guy. So don't let this be you when you deploy Link 2013 and forget to migrate something special, move users across, and then your CIO calls up and says, nobody can make phone calls anymore. Don't be the guy under the car. So the purpose of this session is to guide you down the nice tree-lined road to Link Server 2013, migrating from R2 or 2010 to 2013 and maintaining a period of coexistence. So with that, welcome to Migration and Coexistence with Link Server 2013. My name is Justin Morris. I'm a Link MVP and Senior Consultant for Modality Systems. We're a UC specialist based out of London, UK and Seattle, Washington in the US. So what I'm going to cover as part of this session, the 12 things I mentioned, unfortunately not those 2,000 things like spiders in my country. I'm going to talk about the initial migration considerations initially, so what you need to think about before you hit the button and move users, and then dive straight into migrating from OCS 2007 R2 and Link Server 2010, so the individual things that you need to know and understand there. I'm going to talk about R2 and 2010 coexistence environments today, and then change tack a bit and talk more about the client side of things, with coexistence and interoperability. I'm going to touch on the AutoDiscover service and what you need to know about that within Link 2013. And then I'm going to just like bang through the list and start talking about Edge server migration, external web services migration, group chat, mobility coexistence as well. Good thing to mention about, to know about now with CU1 coming out with Link 2013. And then how you manage your Link environment during coexistence. And then I want to talk about bespoke migration scenarios, and things that are a little bit off-piste that and not so like rosy that you might need to think about a bit more and plan a migration plan for. Okay, initial migration considerations. The first question you need to ask yourself is what version are you migrating from? Are you currently on OCS 2007 R2, like everybody's on that and all your servers are that version? Or are you on Linux Server 2010? Or are you in a mix of that? And do you need to plan some kind of strategy to get away from that mixed environment right now? So that's the very first question that you need to ask yourself. The next is, what features and topology will you be deploying? Are you just going for a kind of minor approach with maybe instant messaging and presence and some conferencing? Or do you use Link for your full voice deployment today and you need to maintain that full feature set moving on to Link 2013? And if you're in my HANDR session before, what kind of topology do you need to deploy? Is it going to be two paired standard edition servers or a enterprise edition pool in multiple sites? Are they going to be paired? Do you need to deploy additional mediation servers? And all those different parts of the topology you need to support your environment. You need to think that when you deploy Link 2013, you need to deploy and migrate from the inside out. So you deploy your Link 2013 front-end pool and mediation server pool and internal network components first, and then deploy your edge servers and perimeter network components secondly. And then in terms of migration, you would migrate from the inside out as well. So migrate your users to a 2013 pool, and then migrate to the 2013 edge. I will cover this in more detail. It's very much a high-level kind of association. I could just say that and just walk out and go to the pub, but I've got more to talk about, so all right. So as I said, internal servers first, front-end pool, mediation servers, edge servers last. A quick note here on server roles that have been de-emphasized and co-located in Link Server 2013. The AV conferencing server no longer exists as a dedicated role within the environment anymore. It is going to always be rolled up to and co-located in the front-end server. You can't define an AV conferencing server in 2013 anymore. And the monitoring server is co-located with the front-end server as well. So parts of the environment that have now been taken out from the fold and co-located in the front-end server, which is really great to see. When you're deploying your SQL databases, it's good to understand that you can't deploy these into an existing instance used by a previous version. So if you have R2 deployed today with your RTC database and RTC Dyn and that kind of thing within an instance, you can't reuse that instance to deploy Link Server 2013 because they have the same database names. So you do need to provision a new instance or new service completely, especially around database mirroring, to support that environment. Thirdly, tri-existence is not supported. So you can't maintain OCS 2007 R2, Link Server 2010, and Link Server 2013 within one environment, one AD organization, effectively. There's nothing technically within Topology Builder that will stop you from doing this. It's another supportability thing. So Microsoft does not support tri-existence of OCS and Link Server versions. Cool. Now, I think, like, just touching on migration for a second, and I think this is quite an important thing to understand because it's all well and good for us to learn more about Link Server 2013 and the great features and functionality in that. It's really important to understand how you get to that end goal, really. So I think, like, migration is such an important thing to understand. So migrating from OCS 2007 R2. Before I go into this, raise your hand if you're on R2 today. Okay. And 2010? Oh, awesome. That's really good to see. It's always interesting to see how many versions people are back, but that's a good turnout. Cool. The first thing you need to do for your OCS 2007 R2 servers is install the latest cumulative updates onto all those R2 servers. So I think it's in the realm of CU 8 or 9, I don't know off the top of my head. But you do need to download the latest CU for OCS 2007 R2 and install it onto your R2 front-end servers, mediation servers, that kind of thing, because this is what provides coexistence with Link Server 2013. Secondly, you need to apply your AD updates and define link topology. So you need to run through the schema preparation, forest preparation, and domain preparation for each domain that will home link users and link resources. And this raises the version level up to Link 2013 that can will then accept link server resources and servers into the AD environment. And then you need to actually define your link topology. So in that lovely design document that you've written that defines everything and how it's going to look, that's when we start to put that into practice and define it within the link topology. Once the topology is defined, you can go up about deploying the Link 2013 pool. So provisioning the backend databases for 2013, standing up the front-end servers, making sure that's all healthy, and any other servers that you're deploying, mediation servers, things like that. The next thing we need to do is merge the OCS 2007 R2 topology into the Link topology. And this makes the Link topology aware of your legacy R2 environment, so it can authorize connections from those servers. Next, we need to import legacy policies and settings, and this ensures that all the things you've done to maintain meeting configurations and remote user access policies within R2 are migrated across into 2013 and can be continued to be assigned to users. Next, you need to actually configure that 2013 pool that you've deployed. So this is about configuring up any voice routes that you need to do, additional policies, configurations that will shape the user experience on this 2013 pool. Seventh, the big thing, the big user impacting thing, migrating the users over to the 2013 pool. And then I'm going to cover completing my post-migration tasks. And then the last thing you do is decommission the OCS 2007 R2 environment. So start to uninstall those servers, removing the legacy environment, and start to move yourself to a clean slate of just Link Server 2013 in your environment. So that's a decently long list with a lot of things within each task there. And I want to cover on a few of these things because they're worth diving into and explaining in a bit more detail and elaborating on. So I'm going to cover these last six items here in the list. First thing is merging your R2 topology into the 2013 topology. So what you can see is that within Topology Builder, the merge of the R2 topology creates this backcompat site, and it will populate all of your OCS R2 resources into that central site within topology. And to do this, you do need to have the WMI backwards compatibility package installed onto the machine you're using to merge the legacy topology on. And the reason this is because if we think back to how OCS R2 operated, configuration was stored in three different parts. It was stored in Active Directory, SQL, and local WMI instances on those OCS servers. So we need the WMI backcompat package installed so that your link server you're running this commandlet from can go out and look into WMI on your R2 servers and pull out that config. Next thing, importing your legacy policies and settings. This imports all your OCS 2007 R2 voice, conferencing, external access, and archiving policies into Link Server 2013. And what this allows you to do is then assign those migrated legacy policies onto users when they're on 2013 so they don't have a change in the user experience. And the way this is done is by running the commandlet import-cs legacy configuration after the topology has been merged. So we need to know about the servers first, and then we can import legacy config into our 2013 topology. And then once those legacy policies are imported, they can be viewed within the Link Server control panel. So you'll see them all listed under conferencing policies, archiving policies, and be able to modify them. And they'll be listed with a comment called migrated, so you'll be able to know which ones have been migrated from the R2 environment. Okay, configuring your Link Server 2013 pool. The first thing you need to do is, once the 2013 pool exists, is you need to connect to the legacy edge servers in Topology Builder. So you've got a 2013 front-end pool existing, nice, shiny, and new within your environment. You then need to connect that to the legacy OCS R2 edge servers so they can maintain connectivity to the internet for external user access, federation, and public IAM connectivity. So this relates to the inside-out methodology I was talking about earlier. And then inversely, you need to configure those legacy OCS 2007 R2 edge servers to allow connections from Link Server 2013. Because if you think about how the R2 edge server is set up, it's got a configuration within the properties there to list FQDNs that are authorized to connect to it. So it's within that dialog that you would specify the FQDN of your 2013 pool and its front-end server FQDNs to connect to the R2 legacy edge. And then thirdly, you configure any new policies and configurations within the 2013 environment. So if you're moving from feature scenario on your previous pool of just maybe IAM and presence, and then you're saying with 2013, we're also going to provide enterprise voice. So it's at this stage you would start defining those new policies and configurations. So do we want to allow anonymous users to bypass the lobby, and do we want to assign presenter rights to everybody in the company or not? And it's here that you would start to lock those features down and really craft the entire environment. Okay, the big one, migrating of users. Use the cmdlet move-cs legacy user to achieve this. And you need to give some thought into how you're going to migrate. My recommended approach is to develop a script that does this so that you could specify a CSV file with all the list of users that you want to migrate and then call that CSV file using a script to migrate users from the R2 pool to the 2013 pool. But everybody has their own way of doing this. It is open to interpretation. And once the users are migrated across, you would assign any of those new policies that you'd created, conferencing policies, voice, client policies, things like that, so those users get the user experience that you want. And lastly, a bit more of a business and adoption thing is send communications and provide training, because I think of like countless environments I've been in client deployments where they've just migrated users and not provided sufficient training and communication, and the adoption hasn't been as good as they wanted. The satisfaction of users has been less than ideal in terms of how successful the project was. So I can't underestimate enough how important sending communication to your users and training is. Okay, completing post-migration tasks. So after all the users are migrated across to your 2013 pool, these are the things that you would also bring across. So you'd migrate your response groups from R2 to ensure that all the hunt group functionality and IVR that users have been using on R2 are maintained onto 2013. You would migrate your dial-in access numbers to ensure that that sort of key dial-in conferencing service that all your executives use remains working once you move over to 2013. Migrate your voice routes as well. So within R2, you've probably got your voice routes pointing to a R2 mediation server. You would need to migrate those across and modify them to point to a 2013 mediation server or the co-located mediation server on the front end pool and to any new gateways, SBCs you'd defined as an IP PSTN gateway within Topology Builder. You would move your Exchange UM contact objects, and this ensures that accessing voicemail still works and users still receive their voicemail once they've been migrated across as well. Then you could go about removing your legacy archiving and monitoring servers. And it depends on what you wanted to do with the databases that were sitting there. A lot of my customers detach the databases and store those away for historical purposes. Some like to do some things where they keep them accessible in a web format or something like that. But you would remove these servers from the environment and obviously have new ones provisioned within 2013 to still provide that requirement. And then lastly, deploy your Link 2013 clients. I'll touch on this a bit later in another slide about what flexibility you have available to you, but it's at this point you would deploy Link 2013 clients at a very high level. After you've completed the post-migration tasks, you've brought across those like auxiliary parts of the environment, you then begin decommissioning the OCS 2007 R2 environment. You can move the conference directories from R2 across to Link 2013. Update your DNS SRV records. Now, as long as the R2 pool is still up, your users, once they've been migrated to 2013, would still log in if the SRV records are pointed to the R2 pool, because OCS and Link pools have a way to redirect connections between each other. So if I log in and I hit an OCS server, OCS server is smart enough to tell me to go to the Link server. But if I decommission the OCS server and I haven't moved the DNS SRV records, it means the next day you come in and users won't be able to sign in properly. So you do need to update the SRV records to point to the 2013 pool. Once that's completed, you can begin decommissioning the OCS R2 servers. So pulling down those old Windows 2003 servers, uninstalling OCS, and getting yourself into a nicer, like, Nirvana state of play. You can then remove the backcompat site from topology that's created in the first instance, and this goes even further to, you know, creating that very much pure environment. Okay, I've covered OCS 2007 R2. I'm now going to cover migrating from Link Server 2010. There are some similarities between the two, but there's some very different things as well, because obviously OCS R2 had no concept of a central management server or a topology or anything like that, and that was introduced in Link Server 2010. So we need to, there's some considerations in introducing a 2013 environment into an existing 2010 environment that make things a little bit easier for you as well. So first thing, once again, is you need to install the latest cumulative updates on all your Link Server 2010 servers. Once again, it's a good housekeeping feature anyway, but provides interop between Link 2010 and Link 2013. Once again, apply Link 2013 AD updates and download topology from your existing deployment. So this is where things start to change a bit compared to OCS R2, because we've already got a topology defined in Link 2010. So we download that and start to define Link 2013 objects within that existing 2010 topology. As I said, define that 2013 pool and deploy the 2013 pool. So downloading the topology to topology builder, defining the 2013 pool, deploying your databases for the 2013 pool, and provisioning front-end servers. Fourth thing you would do is migrate your users from 2010 to 2013. Fifth, you complete your post-migration tasks, and these will look different to what R2 looks like in terms of post-migration tasks. And then decommission Link Server 2010. So once again, I want to cover the last three here in a bit more detail, because they do have some more things involved in them, especially around the post-migration tasks, like I mentioned, and the decommissioning of Link Server 2010. Okay, so you've defined your pool for 2013, you've deployed it, it's all sitting there ready to go, services are started, you're ready to start a pilot of migrating your users across. This time you use the move-csuser commandlet with the move conference data switch, which, like it says on the tin, will move the conference data across. Once again, think about how you're going to migrate. Will this be scripted? Do you have some existing provisioning tools that you'll use to do this? Once again, you would assign any new policies you created within 2013 to migrated users to maintain that designed user experience. And lastly, I reiterate again, send communication and training. If you don't have people internally that manage business and technology relations, like a liaison person, it's worthwhile seeking one out from the market to be able to help you determine what's required for that. Okay, completing your post-migration tasks. You need to migrate the existing meetings and meeting content from 2010 to 2013. Once again, migrate dial-in access numbers from 2010 to 2013 so that all those dial-in conference numbers still work. Now, the last thing you want is a CIO calling up from India saying the India dial-in conference number to stop working because you forgot to migrate it. Migrate your call park settings. It's a feature that was introduced in Link 2010 to enable to park a call, put it on hold, and retrieve it elsewhere using a string of digits. Migrate those settings across to Link 2013. Migrate your response groups once again. And then next, migrate common area phones and analog devices. Another feature that was introduced within Link 2010. So the common area phone contact objects you have, migrate those across to 2013. And any analog devices you've provisioned through analog gateways, move those across as well. You need to redeploy your survivable branch appliances. This is something that has a bit more involved in it, and I will go into in a sec. It's one thing to be very, very much aware of. Then you can deploy your Link 2013 clients. And so, as I said, I want to reiterate a bit around the redeployment of your SBAs. Okay, so what you need to do is there's no migration path from Link 2010 SBA to Link 2013 SBA. You can't do an in-place upgrade or move to them in a non-impactful manner, if that is a word. So the first thing you need to do is move your branch users to another pool. So you'd move them from the branch site to the central site and have them assigned to the central pool. So they can still log in, they can still make phone calls, everything like that. Their services isn't interrupted. And then you need to remove the Link Server 2010 SBA from topology completely. So get rid of it completely, republish topology so it's no longer present. And then you would add your new Link Server 2013 SBAs to topology and configure the central site front-end pool as its backup registrar. So the SBA vendors that are out there are shipping 2013 versions of their code now that you can acquire. And it'd be good to work with your partners and vendors on that one because there is something involved in the migration path for that. Once the 2013 SBA exists in topology and it's been configured to the FE pool as a backup registrar, you can move the users back to that new SBA and they can start to be in the sort of end configuration you're expecting. Okay, once your SBAs are done, if you've got them, you can now begin to decommission Link Server 2010. So going through the environment and picking off those bits and pieces that exist to get that environment out of the way and moving to a pure Link Server 2013 environment. Once again, first thing you need to do is update DNS SRV records. Like I mentioned before, we want to avoid a situation where clients can't log into Link. Next, you need to move the CMS to Link Server 2013. This is a big one and the most significant change from migrating from R2 and decommissioning OCS 2007 R2, where you need to move CMS from the legacy 2010 pool and put it onto the new 2013 pool. You need to remove your archiving and monitoring servers. Once again, archive out that data, store it somewhere if you want to, and remove those two types of servers from Link 2010 topology. Once that's complete, you can remove the Link Server 2010 pool and any SQL Server databases that relate to the pool and archiving and monitoring servers. I'm going to go into a bit more detail around moving the CMS to Link Server 2013 because it is a critical component of the environment. So we need to make sure we get it right and we don't lose any data and things like that. First thing you need to do is actually prepare your Linux Server 2013 pool to home to house the CMS. And this involves installing CMS databases into the backend SQL server for your 2013 pool. And what this will do is provision a XDS database and LIS database on your 2013 pool. So when you run the next commandlet, it will populate those two databases with the CMS and the location information services data. Once the databases have been provisioned, you can move the CMS using the move-cs management server commandlet. Once that's completed, you want to verify replication is completed using the get-cs management store replication status commandlet. And this ensures that everything's been replicated across nicely and the 2013 pool now owns the CMS. Once the CMS is moved across and replicated and everything's looking nice, you can remove the CMS databases from the 2010 pool using the uninstall-cs database commandlet and apply that to the 2010 pool SQL Server FKDN. And the reason we do this is we need to, as part of your uninstallation process, you need to kind of like pick bits and pieces out. You can't just like drop everything off because Link will complain if you attempt to do that. So you need to uninstall the CMS database from the 2010 pool. Alrighty, I've covered OCS 2007 R2 and Link Server 2010 migration scenarios from a server perspective. Now I want to talk about R2 and 2010 environments. So who here has R2 and 2010 deployed today? Only a handful. Okay, that's good. I asked that in North America and like half the session raised their hands and I was like, oh dear. And so we had a lively question session afterwards. Question? Okay, the question was, can you migrate on the same hardware? No, you can't. You can't do an in-place upgrade. It's a side-by-side upgrade, so you do need to deploy your 2013 pool onto new hardware. Okay, the question was, could you use virtual machines to... So you want to deploy onto virtual machines first and then move them back to... in a sort of like V to P sort of thing, like virtual to physical, or... Okay, I'll tell you what, come and ask me after the session and we can cover it because it sounds a bit detailed, so... Okay, great. So R2 and 2010 environments. Microsoft have put some effort into this to really understand that this is this does exist and that there are some solutions available. So there's two strategies here to consider. You can decommission Link 2010 and fall back to your R2 environment and move straight to Link 2013, or move to 2010, drop off your R2 environment, and then move to 2013. And what I'll do, I'll just run down the stack from each of these from top to bottom and go through the client strategy, server strategy, and that kind of thing. So what you need to understand is that R2 clients can use 2013 server for instant messaging and presence, but everything else won't work with your R2 client, including the live meeting console, will not work against the 2013 server. And when you migrate the users across, the Link client will need to be deployed to them. But if you've got R2 users still sitting there, they can attend Link meetings using Link Web App. The server strategy for this would involve decommissioning Link 2010, building a parallel 2013 server infrastructure, so you've got R2 and 2013 sitting there, and then looking at migrating your R2 users across to 2013 server. The advantage of this is it's just a single server migration. There's not a double hop involved. Disadvantages is it's a multiple client migration, so you need to potentially fall back to R2 and then deploy Link 2013. But this is really recommended for customers who aren't heavy users of conferencing. So if you've just got OCS 2007 R2 for IAM and presence, this would be a more recommended approach. But if you are a heavy user of conferencing features today, you might be more so inclined to take the right-hand side strategy, which involves migrating your R2 users to 2010, decommissioning the R2 server environment, and then migrating the 2010 users to 2013. So it means that it's less of a client impact, but it's a two-server migration. And these slides will be available on Channel 9 afterwards for you to refer to, because there is a lot going on within this table here. Okay, moving away from the server side part of things, I want to talk about now about client coexistence and interoperability. So of all the clients that we've got within the mix of R2 and 2010 and 2013, which of those can connect to which server version? And it looks like this. So the good thing here that I'll point out straight away is that Link 2010 can connect to both Link 2013 and Link 2013 can deploy, sorry, let me start again so I get the server and client versions right. Link 2010 can connect to Link Server 2013 and Link 2013 can connect to Link Server 2010. So you have a lot more interoperability with the client and server versions. Another thing I'll point out here is that Link 2010 group chat, it is interoperable with Link Server 2013 persistent chat, but some manual configuration is required to get that group chat client to work. Okay, Link 2010 attendee as well is a good one. So that's essentially deprecated and gone within Link Server 2013, because we now have Link Web App 2013. So the attendee client is no longer necessary. And as I mentioned before, the R2 client there is interoperable, but only for IAM with Link Server 2013. Okay, client considerations for Link 2013. The big thing to understand is Link 2013 is not supported on Windows XP or Windows Vista. And this will be a big blocker for a lot of companies. But it does mean that if you've got Link 2010 deployed today, you can use that on your XP or Vista machines and use Link 2010 against the Link Server 2013 backend if you wanted to, until which time you've upgraded to Windows 7 on the desktop. The second thing here that has an impact on the desktop is that Office 2007 is not supported. So 2010 is the minimum supported version for Link 2013. Sorry, say that again. So the question was, Office 2007 is not supported with Link 2013 client or server, and it's not supported with Link 2013 client. Okay, yeah, that's a good question, yeah. So if you've got Office 2007 but Link 2010 on the desktop, could you connect to Link Server 2013? The answer is yes. So that will work. It's a client-side interaction thing. And what happens is if you try to use Link 2013 with Office 2007, you don't see any presence within Outlook. So the presence functionality breaks. Thirdly, live meeting is not supported against Link Server 2013. So if you've got that today, you do need to move away from it. It's very much a deprecated application now. And the gallery view video experience that you get within Link 2013 isn't available on Office Communicator 2007 R2 or Link 2010. So if you're using Link 2010, but your users are homed on Link Server 2013, they won't get the gallery view when they're participating in video conferences. They'll still just get the active speaker view. Okay, like I was saying, server or client first, it's really up to you how you do this, because As I said, Link 2013 can connect to Link Server 2010, and Link 2010 can connect to Link Server 2013. It provides you with some added flexibility when planning a client migration, makes that independent of server migration. So I've got some customers now that are planning this, and they're saying, we're going to maintain Link 2010 on the desktop for a while, maybe 6 to 12 months, but we're going to move everybody to Link Server 2013 backend very soon. And they can coexist in that scenario for really as long as they like. They, you know, you need to understand you won't get the rich features of Link Server 2013 on a 2010 client, but you can coexist there, and both those versions will work happily together. Like I said, in addition to the gallery view features of Link 2013, they won't see things like persistent chat and other things that have been introduced within Link 2013 until they're homed on the 2013 pool. Okay, what happens to attendee? Like I said before, attendee is no longer necessary because we do have Link Web App 2013 now, which provides that full video experience, audio experience, and there's no need to install a client-side application just so people you invite from outside the organization can join a Link meeting.
Is there any plans to integrate Skype client to use for the colleagues that is attending an external meeting? Because Skype is widely used.
Sure. Okay. Okay. Question was, is there any plans to allow users to use Skype to join Link meetings? That's the question. I honestly don't know. I can't share anything on that one. Sure. So just released today was an update to the Windows 8 client to allow you to anonymously join a Link meeting using that Windows 8 client. So if that's any indication that you know there's things coming that will allow attendee functionality on other devices. So the question was anonymous join to Link meetings from iPads and iPhones and things like that. It's now in Windows 8. So. So it sort of half answers the question, I know, but yeah. So as I said, users without Link 2013 installed will use Link Web App 2013, which if you haven't seen before, do come down to the Link booth in the Microsoft Solutions experience, and we're more than happy to show you what Link Web App and Link 2013 looks like side by side, and you can barely tell the difference between the full fat Windows client and Link Web App running in a browser. You've got full video, full audio, desktop sharing and everything like that, you would get in the full fat client. So it really is a good experience now. Okay, how about changes to Link Phone Edition? There aren't any new devices expected that run LPE, Link Phone Edition. Sorry, question over here. Okay, question was, will there be a Link attendant? Let me move back to here. The answer to that is no. There's no further product development on the Link attendant client, so that's essentially end of life. Cool, so Link Phone Edition. Existing Aries devices will continue to work with Link Server 2013. So when I say Aries, I mean CX500, CX600, the HP phones, I've drawn a blank now. But those phones will continue to work with Link Server 2013. And the firmware has now been renamed to just Link Phone Edition. It's Link Server. So they've dropped the 2010 and 2013 now off that because that new firmware will work with both 2010 and 2013 server versions. But now we've got this up-and-coming program called 3PIP, third-party IP phone. And it's vendors of the likes of SNOM and Polycom and audio codes as well, that are developing IP phones that work against Link. And they're developing their story very quickly to reach feature parity with Link Phone Edition around things like boss admin, PIN authentication, music on hold, things like that. So it gives Polycom and vendors like that a bit of flexibility to develop their own phones that are compatible with Link And you know, they can do lots of cool things that they brought across from their experience with other PBXs and introduce that into Link. Okay, moving away from the client coexistence thing away, but still touching on the client stuff a bit, is understanding the auto-discover service. Now, it was introduced within Link 2010, but it was only utilized for the Link 2010 mobile client. Link 2010 clients didn't use that auto-discover service. It was installed as part of CU4. But now, within 2013, the auto-discover service has is made more prominent. So Link 2013 clients will attempt to connect to two FKDNs on sign-in, linkdiscoverinternal.sipdomain and linkdiscover.sipdomain. And they use this to locate their registrar and web services URLs. So when a client connects to linkdiscover.contoso.com, it connects to the auto-discover service on your front-end pool, and the auto-discover service gives it back its list of FQDNs and web services URLs to connect to sign in and then access web services, essentially. So if Link Discover points to front-end pool in Paris, but I'm homed on a front-end pool in Berlin, that Paris pool will tell me to go and connect to the Berlin pool, and I'll cache that information so next time I go back to the Berlin pool. And this is what provides things like the Link 2013 mobile client and applications using the UC Web API to connect to the auto-discover service and then get referred to the pool that they run on. And the SRV record, it still works, but it's been de-emphasized. So it gets attempted lower down the list after a client can't resolve the link discover FQDNs. Like I said, link discover internal A record, it must point to your internal pool, so that because we want to avoid, say I've got my Link 2013 Windows clients sitting on the internal network. If you're using Link 2010 mobility today, your Link Discover records probably point to the reverse proxy public IP. Now you want to avoid the Link 2013 clients doing a hairpin and coming into the reverse proxy and using the edge servers. So Link Discover internal should point to the internal pool virtual IP. Okay, edge server migration. Covered all things around FE pool and client stuff now. Now talk a bit more about those auxiliary pieces of your environment. Okay, two options here around how you want to migrate your edge server. You can do a rip and replace if you wanted to. Obviously, this would be service impacting, but you could plan some downtime on a weekend and say, I'm going to uninstall my 2010 servers and then install new 2013 servers with the same fully qualified domain names, same public IPs, that kind of thing. So it means that you don't need to maintain a period of coexistence on your in your DMZ. You could just rip and replace everything if you wanted to, if you can accept that downtime. The second option is a side-by-side transition. So you'd have your Link 2010 edge pool deployed in the DMZ. You'd then deploy a Link 2013 edge pool in the DMZ as well, side by side. And that would have new IP addresses assigned to it, new FKDNs assigned to it as well. And they would both be running at the same point in time. And then at some point, you would migrate over services to the 2013 edge, so redirecting DNS and things like that and notifying Federation partners. So if you are using closed federation, you do need to update those partner organizations and say, hey, I've changed the FQDN that I use for my edge now. Please update your list of allowed partners within your Link environment. And when it comes to public IM connectivity, you need to notify Microsoft if you've changed your access edge FQDN. And this is especially important now with Skype Federation provided via public IM connectivity. Off the back of Windows Live, is that if you do migrate across and your access edge FKDN changes, you need to notify Microsoft of that change. And there may be some lag time as that change filters through their system for that change to take effect. So plan for that one carefully. Okay, external web services migration. Still sitting in the DMZ here, what kind of things do you need to do to ensure that users still have the exact same experience when they're logged in from home? You need to create two new web publishing rules on your TMG, if you're lucky to still have TMG, or your F5s or KEMP or something like that that's in the DMZ that's providing reverse proxying. You need to create one that publishes the external web services URL of the Link 2013 pool, and another that publishes the external web farm URL of your new Office Web Apps pool. Because once your 2013 pool is stood up and users are migrated across to that, they have an external web services URL assigned to them, and that needs to be available externally so they can still download the address book, expand distribution lists, things like that. Now, your simple URLs, they need to be pointed to the 2013 director or front-end pool virtual IP. And this is things like meet.contoso.com, dialin.contoso.com, things like that. Just touching on that, actually, if your simple URLs are still pointed to a 2010 pool, users on 2013 will still work, because the way it happens is, if I'm at home and I click on the meeting URL within the Outlook meeting invite, and then that web request resolves through to a 2010 pool, what happens is it hits a 2010 pool, but then the 2010 pool says, oh, here's your external web services URL for the 2013 pool, and still accesses the meeting that way. So there is a period of coexistence where you can have your simple URLs pointed to your 2010 pool, but ultimately you should be looking to move those to point to the 2013 pool. Okay, group chat migration. I talked about group chat in my HA, sorry, question. Okay, so the question was, if you're migrating from Link 2010 to 2013, would you open any additional firewall ports? Absolutely, yeah, you would. You would open a number of different firewall ports to allow coexistence between the front end, all the front end pools and the edge servers. Right, okay, I understand now. Question was, are there new ports for firewalls for Edge? There are some new firewall ports on the internal firewall that you do need to open up, and they're on TechNet, so you can check those out. Okay, group chat migration. I covered in my last session a bit on persistent chat high availability, so I want to get another show of hands. Who's using group chat today? A couple of people, good handful. Okay, great. This has a bit more involved in it. There's a bit of manual migration of data, so I'll go into a bit of detail here. The first thing you need to do is deploy the Link 2013 persistent chat server, so you then got a side-by-side coexistence scenario going on. And then you need to migrate the legacy chat room data from the 2010 group chat migration environment to 2013. Decommission the legacy group chat servers. So what does it look like in terms of migrating legacy chat room data? The first thing you need to do is stop all the services on the legacy group chat servers. So this will involve some downtime. So obviously plan this accordingly so that those users that use group chat are aware. And then you export all your legacy chat room data using the export-cs persistent chat data commandlet, specifying the DB instance with the FKDN of the SQL server, and then a file name to dump that data out to. And then you stop all the services on your new Link Server 2013 persistent chat servers. So you've got two servers, the 2010, 2013 group chat and persistent chat, all the services are all stopped because we're doing some manual data migration. And then we import the legacy chat room data into the 2013 server using the import -cs persistent chat data cmdlet with our new SQL Server FKDN specified under DB instance and the file name that we'd exported the persistent chat data to in the first place. You need to port the lookup server URI to Link Server 2013. Now, from the old R2 in 2010 days, you know, the OCS chat user object that existed on the pool, you need to delete that because that's gone, thankfully. I've come out of the legacy way of doing things now. And you need to create a new CS persistent chat endpoint using PowerShell with that same URI. So this kind of like modernizes it all into a more sort of a 2013 way of doing things for persistent chat. Once the chat data and the lookup server URI have all been moved into 2013, you can start services on the Link Server 2013 persistent chat servers and cross your fingers and hope that everything works first go. So once the 2013 persistent chat servers are up, you can decommission the legacy group chat servers by uninstalling group chat from legacy servers. And unfortunately, I mean, they're not locked into topology as much as what 2013 are. They're assigned as a trusted application pool in Link 2010, so they're a bit easier to remove out of the environment. Like I said, remove that trusted application and trusted application pool entries from your Link topology. So you would uninstall the actual components from the box and then remove the trusted application pools from topology, republish. Okay, moving on to mobility. This becomes a bit more prevalent now because we have mobility in Link 2010. We've now got mobility in Link 2013, two vastly different user experiences. How do we manage that from a expectation point of view for the users? And what are the server and client implications of that? So it looks like this. If you've got Link Server 2010 with mobility service deployed, your Link 2010 mobile clients will connect to that successfully. But the Link 2013 mobile clients will not, and they'll get an error that says they can't sign in with this version of Link. If you've got Greenfield Link Server 2013 without CU1 deployed, the Link 2010 mobile clients will continue to work. But then you'll get that other error again if you try to sign in to the 2013 server with Link 2013 mobile client. But once you apply CU1 to Link Server 2013, if your users attempt to sign in with Link 2010, they will get a notification to upgrade to the latest version. They continue to use that and just get notified on sign in to say, hey, go to the App Store, you can download a new version if you like. And obviously, Link 2013 mobile client will work natively with CU1 applied Link Server 2013. And if you've got mobility disabled, then you're completely out of luck. You know, users won't be able to sign in. This is something that requires a bit of communication to user base because I saw when the 2013 client came out, there were loads of bad reviews in the app stores because people were just downloading it and trying to sign in and then saying, oh, it doesn't work. And they gave like a 1-star review to the application in the app store. And It wasn't like Microsoft or Link's fault. It was just that their IT admins hadn't applied the CU1 update or anything yet. You know, so around mobility, it does require some planning and communicating to users and setting the expectation that you know, we haven't deployed CU1 yet, so the new Link 2013 mobile client won't work for you, or we're still on Link Server 2010, something like that. Okay. Now you're in a period of coexistence. You've got 2010 and 2013 deployed. You're moving through your migration. You're, you know, taking it easy, just a very controlled way of doing things. How do you continue to manage that environment during your coexistence period? There's a couple of things to be aware of. Any new changes to your OCS R2 topology do require a remerge of the topology. So if you make any changes OCS-wise, you do need to do another merge legacy topology to make sure that the Link environment is aware of those changes that have been made to the legacy environment. Once Link Server 2013 has been deployed, your Link 2010 tools can no longer be used. So Link 2010 Management Shell, Link 2010 Control Panel, you need to stop using those and start using the 2013 versions of those two tools. Okay, bespoke migration scenarios. These are the things that are a bit sort of left of center, that if you found yourself in a bit of a tricky situation, these are the things that I've come across that I wanted to share. So these are situations where front-end pools cannot be easily migrated. So if you've got a forest over here and a forest over here, and you've got R2 there, 2010 over here, how do you migrate easily to a 2013 environment? Or, you know, you've just purchased a company and they've got R2 and, you know, you're in that situation and you're like, okay, how do I get myself into a pure 2013 environment? Simplest way to approach this is you could leverage DB import export from those legacy versions and then use the import-CS user data commandlet to manually import contact lists. This is really if your user base and the business is happy to just be moved across to the new Link 2013 environment with their contact lists intact. So if they've got conferences scheduled, they'll lose the conferences, they'll lose the data. It's just the contact lists that you'll be able to maintain using this particular approach. There are some other things you could do with cross-forest coexistence and forefront identity manager. It does start to get a bit messy, but it is possible. And those are things you would actually use if you were doing a resource forest configuration. So if you've got Link and Exchange configured in one forest and then the users configured in another forest, you could use that approach as well. So it's completely valid and supported, that approach. If you need to migrate group chat, you could do a lift and shift. I did this for one customer where they had group chat in one forest and deploying a group chat R2 in one forest, group chat 2010 in another forest, and we just exported the database and then imported the database into the new deployment and made some table changes. So there is some capability there to do things like outside of the box, basically. All right, some key takeaways. I know I'm probably standing behind you guys and some wine or some beer at 6 o'clock on the first day. Key takeaways here is that try existence is not supported, so know before you go. If you've got R2 and 2010 today, what do you need to do to get to one of those server versions to be able to then effectively migrate to Link Server 2013? Plan your client and server deployments and migrations well. Do you need to do a double hop on the client or the server? It comes back to my slide on R2 and 2010 migration strategies. Understand how client access works now with the AutoDiscover service. It's really important because all the new Link 2013 clients do use this, and you need to ensure your connections aren't hairpinning out to the reverse proxy, that they do hit the internal servers. Okay, I'll open up the floor if anybody's got any questions. Yep, one here.
We are on Office 365.
Okay. Okay. The question was, got Office 365 and they want to introduce Link 2013 on-premise for voice. You've already got the stretched AD and all that kind of thing. Yeah. So that would essentially fit in quite easily. It's just the exchange pieces you need to integrate. Come speak to me afterwards. We can cover that in a bit more detail. Any more questions? One here? Yep.
They kind of get just copied over, and you see them all double on the 2013 side, and the documents tells you to not delete the 2010 repos group because then the 2013 ones would stop working.
Oh, okay.
So you're kind of stuck.
Right.
With everything doubled, so I was wondering how people get out of that situation.
Okay. Yeah, I've not come across that myself. We take it offline and I can maybe try and get an answer for you. Yeah. Any more questions? Yep. Sure, yeah. So the question was, how do you approach deployment of the Link 2013 client? There is a Link Basic 2013 client available for download, which is for Office 365 customers. But the typical approach you'll find is someone use System Center Configuration Manager for deployment of Link 2013. But there is a standalone Link 2013, and then there's Link 2013 integrated with Office 2013 as well. So it depends on the approach that you want to take, whether you want to do standalone or integrated with Office 2013. Yeah, there's some options. Any more questions? Nope. Okay, once again, we do have a book available in the store, and I've got two copies to give away at the Link booth, Link Server 2013 Unleashed. And you can find me later at the Link booth in the MSE. And on Twitter as well, I'm Justin Morris without the end in the middle, so feel free to tweet me. Any questions, I'll be happy to answer. And do please evaluate this session, because it's great to get your feedback and understand what we did well and how we can improve. And with that, thank you very much for coming to our session. Have a great evening.